Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Flicks the Church Forgot. This is the third episode in a multi-part series that's exploring horror movies in which demonic possession is the central theme. I've already explored four of those reviews, so if you want to look at them, then look at episode one and two. But tonight we're going to be looking at Deliver Us from Evil from 2014 and the notorious blaxploitation version of The Exorcist, Abby, from 1974.
There are six stages to exorcism.
Presence. Pretense. Breakpoint. Voice. Clash meets. And expulsion. During each stage, you will do exactly as I say and nothing else. Don't talk to it, don't listen to it, just read and pray.
I got it.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation. But deliver us from evil.
Get ready.
From what?
Scott Derrickson is an interesting filmmaker, particularly to me, because he's clearly a horror fan, but also someone with Christian faith. He's also involved in more films than I'd originally realized or given him credit for, being the screenwriter for some arthouse films and dramas, as well as big-budget sci-fi like Day the Earth Stood Still, which I haven't actually seen. But he's probably most recognizable for his horror work, including The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which is a really well-regarded film, and Sinister, which I think was quite a hit as well. But anyway, this is his film from 2014, Deliver Us from Evil. The film supposedly based on the true events in the life of a police sergeant in the New York Police Department called, I think it was Ray, was it? Sarchi, anyway. Sarchi was his second name. Now, I'm not surprised that Derrickson would want to base a film on Sarchi, because there's an instant draw in the idea of a South Bronx police sergeant who turns demonologist. Now, he worked for the NYPD for 18 years, and he ended up writing a book called Beware the Night, it's a pretty cool title for that sort of thing, about his experiences with the demonic. Though it's worth pointing out that this film is inspired by his situation rather than any particular case in the book. Now, apparently in real life, Sarchi now focuses on demon possession cases full time. And he does this not least because he claims that demonic possession is on the rise. In fact, he argues that society is pushing God out, and the recent public antagonism towards Jesus and the growing secularism, he feels, shows an actual hatred of God that he reckons is more than just society falling out of love with organized religion. He reckons that it might be an expression of satanic distaste with the divine being filtered through society. Yikes. Though Sarchi has witnessed a lot of evil acts in his work as a policeman, it was only when he met the infamous demonology and paranormal investigation team Ed and Lorraine Warren that he started becoming really interested in demonic explanations for the dark side of New York life. Now, Ed and Lorraine Warren crop up in horror talk, and they're a pretty fascinating couple who were the subject of the Conjuring movies, which the sequel is looking forward to, about the Enfield poltergeist. So I guess Derrickson couldn't very well have pulled in the Warren characters into this, since they've always been already been used up in James Wan's sort of franchise. But I do wonder if having a sweet old couple in the midst of Deliver Us from Evil might have given the film more novelty and difference. Because the film has been accused of being a by-the-numbers exorcism film that brings little new to the genre. Although, to be fair, it is quite unique in the sense that this is about it tends to be about males being possessed rather than females. The average demonic possession film seems to be about women. But anyway, I think the critics do have a point in the sense that the film has an old-fashioned feeling to it, though in some senses its retro vibe may appeal to some viewers. For example, the setting itself of New York is great. I remember growing up watching films like The Warriors and Death Wish, and New York always looked so grimy and dangerous, and I'd read newspaper articles about the insane murder rate, and I'd think, wow, that city would be a really great place to visit. but I'd probably not make it out alive, you know? In other words, beyond the Sesame Street, Woody Allen, Manhattan nice bits, New York to, you know, a little sheltered English boy always appeared to be a fundamentally dejected hub of violence, graffiti, and decay. Now, of course, these days, New York has done a lot to deal with the crime rate and the grimy reputation. But what I liked about Deliver Us From Evil was that it felt that we were being transported back into the Escape from New York-style wild world where everything is dark, rainy, and depressing. I think Derrickson does an excellent job of painting a city as a potential dwelling place for seething evil. And there's a few touches in this which I think are effective. For example, there's a scene in the New York Zoo at the start which is pretty creepy and unusual. The whole idea of the evil inspiring animals to be driven to violence towards humans and indeed each other is quite an interesting angle and is used as a sort of repeated motif throughout the film, which I quite liked. Plus, Eric Bana is, I think, pretty convincing as the haunted cop. He does a great New York accent, and you know he's trying to make his best to make sense of the terrifying events unfolding around him. I think he did a good job with it. However, I still found myself having some issues with the rest of the cast. For example, the guy who played the priest. I've read reviews that talk about Edgar Ramirez's portrayal as being a revelation, but I found it like the handsome, whiskey-sipping, cigarette-smoking priest, sort of like a letdown. I don't know why, but I just found him and some of the other characters in this to be surprisingly one-dimensional. For example, there's a sidekick character in it called Butler, played by Joel McHale, and he's Eric Bana's partner, and he does crack some pretty funny lines throughout the film. But then you start thinking, man, does he do anything else except wisecrack and have knife fights? And also, Banner's wife, Jen, played by Olivia Munn, is drawn in just one shade. She's the classic wife wishing her husband spent more time at home. Even when you're home, you're not at home, that sort of thing. And that's fine, you know, that's all well and good. But she just, for some reason, she just felt like a thousand other token wives in these sorts of things. How Derrickson could have fleshed these characters out much more, I'm not sure, considering the story isn't about them, but I have seen plenty of other films where the bit players seem to be alive and real and in a sort of breathing world. This cast didn't fully feel like that for me. Having said that, I reckon there'll be plenty of people who were scared by the film, and some of the imagery is pretty creepy, like the cat crucified, or even the more whacked, I think the more whacked out scene of a crucifix with Jesus on it, though Jesus seems to have like hooves or like, you know, horse's legs or something. I thought that was a really great touch in the sense of the devil warping religious symbology. The demonically possessed people themselves have some fairly good makeup, but the way they lunge about in hoodies in the rain, looking like thugs, made them feel more like, well, less like powerhouses of evil, but rather like drug addicts shuffling around. Maybe that was the intention, but I didn't really get that bit. Now, obviously, with Derrickson being a Christian, he pumps his films with a lot of religious discussion, and I always sort of quite enjoy that. And I like that his conversation in the bar when Eric Bana is saying the problem of evil and its existence disproves God, to which Mendoza, the priest, says, well, what about the problem of good? You know, how do you explain how there are so many in this world who are striving to help people out? Where does that come from? Where does altruism come from in a world of survival of the fittest? And by the end, you know, I think the film is a pretty clear thumbs up for the church. I'm not surprised by that. Though I do wonder how some audiences would have taken that, and maybe they might have felt that it was laid on a little bit too thickly. I'm undecided about it, but I will give kudos to Derrickson for using horror as a platform to explore religious ideas. That's, as you know, something that's right up my street.
I've got Abby! What do you think of my powers now?
American International presents Abby. The story of a woman possessed. She took the devil for a lover, and he possessed her, body and soul. Abby, a story of terror, lust, and exorcism.
Grab her arms and hold her.
Abby, starring William Marshall as the exorcist.
I command you to vacate this body now.
And Carol Speed as Abby. Can anyone stop her? Can anyone help her? Can anyone save her soul?
I've got Abby!
Abby, the story of a woman possessed. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
I've got a bunch of radio spots and movie trailer audio in my iTunes library, and every now and again when I put music on shuffle, I'll be listening to some pleasant music with my kids or family, when all of a sudden the speakers will erupt with this demonic-sounding voice saying, "I've got Abby!" Which is the first part of the trailer to Abby, the Black Exorcist movie. And funnily enough, for years now, I've had that on there, yet I've never actually seen the film. And I guess the film passed me by, firstly because, I was barely born when the film was released in the UK, but also, you know, I've never held a VHS copy in my hand. I never saw it around on DVD. So it was a lot of fun to finally actually get to see the film that might not be that well known to the more casual horror fan, but is a bit of a cult favourite to the more discerning, or be that psychotic viewer. One of the reasons why Abby was such a sparse release history is because Warner Brothers claimed, again, it was a rip-off of The Exorcist. In fact, it became well-known in circles as Abby the Black Exorcist. So when the film started making decent box office returns, Warners weren't impressed and the film was pulled from circulation. This didn't happen with Satan, the Turkish thing, because the country of origin was Turkey, and so it was beyond Warner's jurisdiction. Abby, however, was a US production exhibited in the US, and so it was a victim to the copyright claim. And this lawsuit must have been particularly stinging for the filmmakers, since the budget of $200,000 of the film actually earned $4 million in the first month of release before it got pulled. And the director, William Girdler, didn't get to enjoy any of his money until the case was finally settled, but that was only just before Girdler died in 1978. We'll briefly talk a little bit more about Girdler in a minute. Now, I watched one of the very few reviews of Abby on YouTube, and the guy on there who liked the film, he did claim at one point that Abby, he reckons, may well have been made first, and that Warner Brothers ripped it off for The Exorcist. I think that theory is extremely unlikely. So is it an actual Exorcist ripoff? Well, yes and no. Yes, because it's clearly lifted from the narrative thrust of The Exorcist. You know, innocent, sweet female, this time in her 20s from the looks of it, suddenly starts acting foul-mouthed and sexually violent while her confused husband has to call an exorcist priest, who, by the way, is currently off on location studying ancient demonic religions in a foreign land, this time it's Nigeria. So yeah, the structure is completely ripped off. Even down to the obligatory scene that we see in The Exorcist and the Turkish version, Satan, where Abby is sent to hospital for tests, which means, of course, she has to lie there, subjected to the barbaric and torturous-looking machinery which dwarfs and threatens her. That's a common thing you see in these films. Anyway, I think maybe Abby may well be, or is indeed, an Exorcist ripoff. However, if you look at many Exorcism movies since, they're all, in some ways, a ripoff of the original film. Yet now we realize that all The Exorcist, the first film, did was even that was a ripoff in a sense. It didn't invent its own storyline, but rather The Exorcist was a film that was just a reflection of a religious phenomenon that was happening in real life, or whether it's true or not. Like, the actual acts of exorcism were taking place in places. And so really, Warner Brothers or anybody else ought not to have intellectual property rights over something like that. These days, people make movies that look like The Exorcist because an exorcism movie, that's all it is, and we accept, oh yeah, this is about exorcism. But Abby had the misfortune for being one of the first imitators of this, and so was seen only in the light of The Exorcist film. And so I can understand why the producers wanted Abby pulled, but I still personally think that's just unfair. Because doing that would have been like the makers of the Blair Witch Project suing Paranormal Activity for using the found footage technique. Once a film idea becomes a genre, i.e. exorcism movies or found footage, their styles or structures in some ways become public domain. But it's those early imitators that usually pay the legal price, and Abby certainly paid the price. Of course, it's a bit of a rip-off of the storyline, but then the storyline of somebody getting possessed has a sort of a natural narrative to it anyway. Having said all that, I think Abby was unfairly treated as well, because frankly, I think the story, while it has definitely some similarities, is actually quite a bit different from William Peter Blatty's story, which, remember, itself is based on a real-life case. And the film stars the brilliant William Marshall. You may remember him from his most iconic role as Blackula. And I just reviewed Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream for my Fortune Times column. And I really enjoyed those films, especially Scream, Blackula, Scream. But William Marshall's great actor. He's the guy and his voice just drip dignity. And so he's the perfect choice to play the spiritual authority over demons in this. And I really enjoyed the sunny, happy opening where you see Marshall playing a theologian and archaeologist called Dr. Garrett Williams, who's chatting to his students in the park all about demonology. And he mentions a particular West African demon called Ishu, who's this powerful earth deity who likes to trick and make whirlwinds. And then anyway, Williams heads off to Nigeria to go on an archaeological dig, and he finds this little puzzle box with Ishu symbols on it, and when he opens it, the wind throws him back, and the spirit of Ishu, for some reason, breaks out, but doesn't attack Dr. Williams. Instead, it races across the Atlantic to the doctor's hometown in Louisville, Kentucky, which is also where William Girdler was from, helpfully enough, and Ishu enters Dr. Williams' son's home, climbing inside his sweet and demure wife, Abby. This is all shown in a pretty simplistic but effective way. Abby is in the shower alone, and when you see her shadow through the curtain, and then you see this dark, shadowy figure behind her who is slowly moving up to her, making contact. And it's a very simple, yet I think pretty effective way of showing that Ishu, or at least we think it's Ishu, is entering Abby. As the film progresses, we see Abby doing increasingly weird things. Like at one point, she's in the kitchen working with some raw meat, but gradually she starts getting the wet meat and squeezing it and pressing it, and the camera cuts to her licking her lips in a very grotesque and over-the-top way. Either she's seriously hungry or something is not quite right about Abby. She starts having these wild outbursts, sometimes saying cruel things to her husbands or being sexually inappropriate, and at one point she's singing in the church choir when she collapses into the most hilarious overacted coughing fit I think I've ever seen, and her husband is thinking this definitely looks like mental illness, because it really does. The son calls his dad, Marshall, for advice, and he's saying that she just needs to get a bit of rest. Clearly he's not appreciating the gravity of the situation yet, and finally they take her to the hospital. It seems to be forever until they get round to that. But unsurprisingly for an exorcist movie, the hospital's no help. It's when the son calls his dad and says, "I think Abby's killed someone, Dad," that the dad is finally like, "Oh, right, yeah, that's worse than a headache, I'm coming home." And once he's back, it's time for head-to-head action with theologian and demon. I actually really like Abby. It's got quite an interesting setup going on, and it does something that The Exorcist doesn't do. In the film, The Exorcist, Reagan is pretty much confined to her bed for the entirety of the movie. Yet here, Abby can still go walk about, and she frequently goes to this bar where she keeps propositioning men and throwing blokes into jukeboxes, and I like the idea of the possessed Abby being able to prowl around the local neighborhood, especially because she can sometimes conveniently flit back into the nice Abby persona as a sort of cover story. Another thing I liked about the film is the actors. William Marshall, as I've already said, is an excellent actor with great gravitas, so he's the perfect choice, but also Abby herself is a lot of fun. She's played by Carol Speed, a black 70s actress who appears to have done a film called Disco Godfather after this and then pretty much nothing since. Anyway, she does a good job of playing Abby, and you could say she's quite brave in how over the top she can be in this. I loved how full on crazy she gets in it, and rarely a moment goes by in the film when she isn't assaulting some man, barking out obscenities or lolling her tongue up and around her lips. The woman is nuts. It's worth remembering, though, that the demonic voice that she talks with in the film is not her at all, but it's provided by Bob Holt, the voiceover actor, who would go on to become the famous voice of Gremlins and Gizmo the Mogwai in the seminal 80s family horror movie from Joe Dante. His voice, Bob Holt's voice, is great as the guttural, perverted, demonic voice of Abby, though at times his work is laugh-out-loud hysterical. You know, he has this little laugh that he does which sounds like Elmer Fudd or something. It was just great. Anyway, Abby's husband, played by Terry Carter, who you might recognize from various 70s movies and TV shows, not least perhaps as Colonel Ty as in the original Battlestar Galactica, but he plays this role really well and with a decent sense of sympathy for what must have been a crazy situation to go through. Also, I was really pleased to see Austin Stoker cropping up in this too as a policeman. You'll recognize him as the cop out of John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13. Now, production-wise, this is not exactly slick. Let's put it that way. When Stoker and Carter go searching for Abby through the bars of Louisville, there's an almost home movie feel to it all. And the makeup effect of the demon, which is the obligatory subliminal flashes throughout, is incredibly ropey, to say the least. Maybe the filmmakers thought they were doing something pretty decent, but you know, by comparing that work with the stuff Dick Smith did for The Exorcist, it renders Abby's demon, like, laughable. Like, there's not one time when you see a flash of the demon's face when you go, oh, that's creepy. It's just always, ha, look at that. Another thing that makes Abby more than just the exorcist with black skin is the theology and mythology it employs. This spirit possessing Abby is Ishu, who comes from the Yoruba religion. Now, that comes from Nigeria, as well as places like Benin and Togo nearby. I actually got a friend at our church who's an ethnomusicologist and was just doing a bunch of work over there. Yeah, I should have asked him about that. But anyway, I haven't had time, so I can't. But what I do know is that Yoruba teaches that there are 402 spiritual powers and spirits. And half of them are good guys, and they're called the Orisha, and they protect humans and facilitate nice things for humanity. But the other half are called the Ajogun, and they are like the demonic ones, and they like to throw obstacles and challenges in the way of humans. Ishu is an interesting choice because he's unusual. Like, he is an Orisha, a good spirit, but he also leads the Ajogun, the bad ones. So he's both loved and feared in Yoruba religion. It means it's interesting to speculate if the demon at work in Abby really is Ishu, or perhaps it's some lesser Ajogun demon that's been commanded by Ishu to do this. For what reasons, I'm not sure. In short, there's enough thought and fun in Abby to make it worth a watch, and it's just a shame that it came at such an early time, that it got lost to the legal wranglings for too long. And I just feel it's especially sad for William Girdler, who was, I think, tragically killed in a helicopter crash in 1978 when he was scouting locations for his 10th film. To think that Girdler died at age 30, I feel, is just a real tragedy. I personally suspect that if he had lived, he would have gone on to make some key horror movies in the 1980s and 90s and even beyond. Sadly, we never got to see them. But at least for now, we can enjoy what he did put out, like Grizzly, Day of the Animals, and even The Manitou. But also, check out Abby, because I do think it's more than just an Exorcist clone. So there's a bunch of Exorcism movie reviews, and obviously there's a lot more out there which I haven't been able to cover here, including Repossessed, the 1990 Leslie Nielsen comedy, which I watched again the other day, and I actually found it a lot funnier than I remember it being. Oddly enough, I think at the time when it came out, I was like deeply offended that they were trashing one of my favorite horror movies. Even though I loved Airplane and I loved Leslie Nielsen, I was like, that's wrong, you can't do that. Watching it now, it's actually quite a good laugh. There's also a bunch of horror movies that have a sort of demonic possession idea in them, but they don't neatly fall into the exorcism type movie. For example, The Amityville Horror 1 and 2, or The Evil Dead, The Shining, The Beast Within. These are all films that involve some sort of evil spirit taking over a human being. But they fall into other horror categories before they'd be classed as a typical demon possession movie. And of course, there's lots and lots of demonic possession movies. There's a one with James Farentino, I think, called The Possessed from the 70s, and which I think a TV movie, yeah, and I've not seen it for ages, and I would love to have tried to track that down, but I couldn't do that in time. And there's plenty of other modern ones, the Last Exorcism, and you know, The Devil Inside, and Blood on Satan's Claw, all these, Annalise, The Exorcist Tapes. There's a lot of films out there, but you know, I do have a life as well, so I can't watch all of them. But anyway, hopefully, the selection I've shared with you will give you a sense of what type of exorcism movies might be out there, and the variation you can see in them. Yet in the next episode, the final one, we're going to be putting film scripts and camera angles aside. Instead, we're going to be stepping into the real-life world of demonic possession and asking whether there is anything to it, or if it's just one big delusion. And we're going to discover that the idea of possession is actually a lot more multifaceted and intriguing and strange than perhaps we might even originally imagine. That's next time. But until then, don't forget the flicks the church forgot.
In the name of God Almighty,
trying to steal my powers!
Why would I need your power? You're nothing but a minor spirit, masquerading as one of the mighty Orishas.
What are you trying to pull?
Well, it's obvious you're not the real Ishu, with the power to vanquish your enemies. or you'd be where I am now. I'd be powerless, like you.
Don't play games with me, you simple-minded shit! I always win, you know that!
Not against the true power, not against the real issue.
What kind of fool do you take me for? I know who I am!
But a vulgar display. Then again, you probably don't have control of your faculties. Because if you did, you could speak in well-modulated tones, like Eshu, the linguist.
Θυμήσου, μην ξεχνάς, δεν είναι με τη δική μου γλωσσική ικανότητα. Το δώρο της γλώσσης είναι πάνω το μετάλλιον από την αρχή τη μεγάλη. Αυτά με το Θεό μου.
Oh, that's pathetic. But then, the weakest always make a show of knowing everything. Really, really pathetic.
You didn't understand my Greek, or that Hindi either. You probably don't even speak the Yoruba tongue. Didn't understand a word I said before.
Oh, I understood quite easily your blasphemy.
You're faking.
Ini akbara esuje. Tanje Lasani. It must be growing painfully clear that your insidious fakery has gotten you into very serious trouble.
Why on earth did you choose a shoe to mimic?
You insult my intelligence.
I am a shoe!
Stay. The light of God binds you.